The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's May the 10th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the agricultural news for the day. And then I'll tell you about the new soil productivity king in Illinois. It's not Drummer, Flanagan, or Ipava. We'll hear about that just a bit later in the program. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled on this Thursday afternoon at the Chicago Board of Trade. May futures in the soft red winter wheat pit were up 2 cents at $4.73. July at 481.5 a bushel, off a half. And September futures were down 1¾ at $4.92. May corn futures at 345¾, down 11½. July futures off 11¾ at 354.5. And December contract in the corn pit at 356.5 from Chicago, down 9½ for the day. May soybeans off 3/4 at 733, July at 746¼, down 1¼. And November beans at 775.5 were down 1¾. May bean meal down 3 even at $193.90. They were down $3. May bean oil at $33.30. They were up 46 for the day. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, finished the May contract in the feeder cattle pit unchanged at $108.90. And the live cattle pit June contract at $92.70, up 30 cents. August live cattle at $92.40 were up 40 cents. May lean hogs 42½ cents lower at $73.45. The outside markets now trading the June contract at $61.75. They're up 20 for the day. July at $63.50 a barrel, up 34 cents. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,232 is off 133 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Hang on to your hat, Dan, because the elevator is going down at the moment. What do you see?
Well, there's nothing good in the chart action, at least when you look at the corn market. Today we actually creeped underneath the April lows on the July on-out type contracts. Old crop May here, which is basically a non-functional contract because it's within a week or so here of expiration. So chart-wise, I think the market is real vulnerable here for a breakout to the downside. Now, we broke to the upside here a week ago. We broke some trend lines. It looked good. We followed through with it on Sunday night, but then on Monday we reversed down. So we had kind of like a 20 cent range down on Monday, and ever since then we've seen a pretty good decline. We saw one there on Tuesday. We kind of consolidated a little bit there yesterday, and now we resumed that steep downtrend on Monday, Tuesday, right here into Friday. So I think we're down roughly 30, 40 cents from the highs that were made on Sunday night. So technically, that is not good. We're in new lows. I think from a cyclical point of view, I got to count starting of a new 10-week cycle, I think, on the first part of April. That was made right after that April report This is week five. So if you count out another 5 weeks to the downside, that says this corn market could drift down into a mid-June type low in here. So it pretty well kind of feels the market is telling us that the trade's real comfortable with planting prospects and the market going ahead and planting their 90 million acres. And unless there's some weather problems along the line, it's going to be real tough to get this market to do anything but drift on us, Todd.
How important is tomorrow's WASDE figure?
Well, I think it's overrated. I think the trade overrates this May report. Because I think all it is basically it makes some benchmarks to go up and down from. Everybody's kind of interested to see what they're going to use on yield. There's probably not a lot of reason why they shouldn't use a trend line yield. So I think they're going to be in that 153-ish area probably for the corn yield. And that's going to crank out some pretty good numbers. That's going to crank out a 12-6, 12-7 type crop. So you're going to see some buildup of inventory, depending upon how they use on the demand side, if they use a real strong demand or they back off on demand. But it's probably going to show increasing inventory levels because they will use the March acreage estimates. And so it'll be tough to get anything bullish, but they might throw us something bullish. The market is oversold enough with this big steep decline that, you know, we could be due for some kind of technical bounce or so here off oversold technical conditions. Mm-hmm. But I think the reports are highly overrated. But, if they come in positive, that'll be good news because it'll give the market a chance to maybe recover some of what we've lost. But but I don't see anything super negative in it. I just, the market's already cast that die that we're in a downtrend in this market, especially after this week's action.
And you want to call this sideways to lower? Or simply down?
Well, I think you got to call it down. We've been sideways here for the month of April within
yes.
a 25-cent trading range, but now we're breaking down below this sideways trading range. And like I said, unless we got tomorrow's report to bail us out, you could probably view that sideways range is halfway down. You take the midpoint of this sideways range in the nearby contract, I think would be somewhere around 265. Then you measure that probably off of the high that we had about 343, and that tells you got about a 72-cent decline down to the midpoint. You subtract 72 cents from 365 or something like that, and it tells you you're going to go back to the 290s on the chart action over time if this break to the downside is validated this week with a close underneath it, and we don't see anything fundamentally to kind of turn that around.
Yeah, just put a lot of corn in the ground and demand by ethanol won't be able to keep up with it at the rate that some had thought that was going to be the case?
Well, I don't know if I want to go that far. Remember, the trade can't think that far ahead. I mean, we're going to trade, the short term. And the short term now is that the USJ said we were going to plant 9.5 million. And the weather after kind of a shaky start there in late April, wet April, where it looks like we're going to go ahead and get the crop planted now. Some people may go ahead and plant more acres now. I think that's what the trade's worried about, is maybe the market, the acres may grow in areas that were drier, able to plant, that they're thinking that maybe some people didn't get it planted, so I'll add acres to it. And I think actually the crop insurance policies would probably encourage people to plant more corn now as it's going down, because it looks like pretty good insurance payments. If we plant a big crop, when we raise a big crop, we're going to have some pretty good insurance premiums.
Yeah, they don't have to tell them how many acres they have until later, do they?
Right. So, I mean, if someone was planning a 2,000-acre farm, or if he was planning to plant 1,300 acres of corn and 700 of beans, why doesn't he go to 2,000 and tell the USDA he's got it all corn and collect on the insurance premium? Mm-hmm. So I think there's some of that could go on. So there's reasons to think that maybe the corn acres are actually growing, and then, of course, that would really tee up the soybean market for just an opposite direction through the whole growing season.
Tell me a little bit about marketing corn on the idea, and I think it was Darrell Good that maybe said that if you think the market is going to go drastically lower, then maybe you ought to do something about the cash side of the marketplace. Otherwise, you simply look, if you've got your crop insurance in place on enough of the acres and you're satisfied with the 85 or 75% or whatever level you've taken, that you don't need to do anything, that you look at it as a put. But what if you're in the basket with you and you think this marketplace is going dramatically lower?
Well,
do you pull the trigger somewhere?
Yeah, you're going to have to use rallies, dead cat bounces, or whatever to maybe get something sold if you don't have something sold. Now, whether or not you choose options or futures or cash forward contracts, you kind of got to. That's going to be an individual type situation. But I'll just about bet anything is that anybody that's looking at distant basis levels don't feel that they're probably very attractive, and I'm not too sure they have much of a chance of getting better. You know, they could get worse yet before it's over with, because, you know, the big concern, and this is what everybody talked about a little bit last winter, is if we go ahead and have a big crop, what happens? And if we have a 12.6 or 12.8 billion bushel corn crop or 13 billion bushel corn crop, how much strain does that put on our transportation facilities, our storage facilities? That kind of tells you that you could have a basis level that just absolutely gets worse from here on out. Now, but, you know, if the weather turns around and tightens up the crop to 11.5, well, then it's all together to a ball game. So, but for the time being, I think that the market is going to, you know, say the crop's going to get planted generally timely. We are maybe a little bit behind average, but it's going in now, and they'll have to kind of use a trend line type yield or whatever USDA comes up with tomorrow, and I don't see a lot of reason why they would use anything other than a trend line yield, but I've been surprised before by USDA. So I think tomorrow's numbers have the potential of looking fairly bearish, at least initially. But, I mean, it's June and July weather, and maybe we're switching now to a drier pattern after we've been into kind of a cold, wet April. Now we're going to switch into something warm and dry, and that could maybe get the market excited, but that'll take a few weeks of that, I think, to get the market excited.
Well, we'll be glad to have you as the bearer of really good news today. We appreciate it.
Very good.
That's Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois, telling us about those dead cat bounces. That's one of my favorite terms. It goes down, bounces up, and just when you think it ought to keep going, it's a dead cat and falls to the ground. Hey, taking a look at what Ed Kieser says about the weather forecast for the two-state region. Tonight in the north, partly to mostly cloudy. In central sections, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers across Illinois and Indiana. In the south, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Lows from 55 in the north to 65 in far southern Indiana. Tomorrow, Ed says, in the north and central sections, a mix of clouds, some sunshine, scattered showers too. In the south, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow on Friday, 72 near Lake Michigan to 85 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now. He'll take a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the House will take up a standalone $3.5 billion ag disaster assistance bill tomorrow for producers who suffered a qualifying loss during 2005, 2006, or a portion of 2007. The language of the bill is virtually identical to a section of the war supplemental spending legislation that President Bush vetoed on May 1st. The White House objected to disaster provisions because the funds that would be provided would be designated as emergency spending that would not require reductions somewhere else in the federal budget. Those funds are still considered emergency spending in the latest version of the measure. The House Committee on Agriculture had tough questions yesterday for USDA and FDA officials concerning spiked wheat flour from China. The flour contained melamine, and it's appeared in chicken, hog, and fish feed. Animals eating the industrial chemical have entered the U.S. food supply. USDA and FDA officials maintain there is no risk to human health, but House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says the U.S. dodged a bullet.
The explanations from USDA and FDA leave me with the uncomfortable feeling that maybe we just got lucky this time. The next time tainted food or feed products slip through the very large cracks in our import inspection system, we may be forced to confront a much more serious situation in terms of animal or human health.
FDA's Food Safety Chief David Acheson says the agency lacks the resources to inspect other nations' food systems and focuses on the most likely threats in limited import inspections, now just 1% of food imports.
We would never have the resources to be able to inspect and test 100% of imported food. So it's clearly important that we use a risk-based strategy, and that's what we've done. And over the years, we have moved away from testing foods that are considered to be lower risk and focused on areas that are higher risk.
Ranking House Ag Committee member Bob Goodlatte says an FDA system for establishing foreign food safety standards should be similar to those the USDA applies to the domestic food supply. And Virginia Congressman Bobby Scott called for a tougher line on importing from offending nations like China.
Here we've got China that you seem to think has it under control now. But this isn't the first time. China is notorious in contaminated food products. We've had all kinds of history, news reports on its honey, for example. On its catfish, for example. So it's repeat after repeat.
Peterson told the hearing that imported Chinese products may have been intentionally adulterated with melamine. The Senate Commerce Committee has approved a plan that would provide federal grants of up to $30,000 to gasoline station owners to help cover costs associated with switching up to 3 pumps to E85 gasoline. Of the 180,000 gasoline stations across the country, less than 1,800 offer E85 gas. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website today, tonight, and sign up for our weekend newsletter. If you do that this evening, tomorrow morning we'll deliver the WASD numbers directly to your email sometime just about 7:45 a.m., not too long after the release of those numbers at 7:30 from USDA. You can sign up by hitting subscribe at willag.org. Well, up next, Illinois farms have a new soil productivity king. The latest assessment of soil types in the state has assigned the top spot to a western Illinois soil. There are about 400,000 acres of Muscatoon soils in Illinois. Most of those are in the western part of the state and range from Quincy to the Quad Cities. The soil scientists at the U of I say after the most recent productivity assessment, these soils are the best Class A ag lands in the state. Ken Olson updated the productivity indices on the more than 840 different Illinois soil types and complexes.
Our ratings are used for farmland sales. It's used for land appraisal. It's also used for ag land assessment. And the ag land assessment issue required us to update the yield estimates and the productivity ratings. And it is a responsibility of the University of Illinois to establish soil productivity ratings that it's used in that particular assessment program.
The western Illinois soil, Muscatoon, was assigned the highest productivity index. It's 147. Ipava, Drummer, and Flanagan all remain Class A prime farmland, but no longer share the top spot for a pretty simple reason, says Ken Olson.
I think the first reason is that we rate soils to a 60-inch depth, or 5 feet now. Back in the 1950s, we were ranking the soils based primarily on the upper 40 inches. And when you bring that lower depth in, it does have impact under today's higher levels of management. And I think that's why originally in the 1950s and in the 1970s, we ranked nine soils in the top group, of which three were considered the best under high management. We've since subdivided those top three, which happened to have been Flanagan, Ipava, and Muscatine. We've established that Muscatoon, as we refer to it now, is the deepest and best soil by just a little margin over the Flanagan and the Ipava.
The Muscatoon has greater rooting depth, and that gives it, on corn, a couple of bushels to the acre advantage over the other top soils. You heard Olson refer to it as Muscatoon and Muscatine. The name change has come in Illinois to differentiate the Illinois version of the soil from that found in Iowa. Both are deep loess or wind-blown soils. The Illinois version, Muscatoon, has a bit more clay in the subsoil. If you'd like to learn more about the Soil Productivity Index ratings, just search Google for Illinois Soil Productivity. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's a Thursday afternoon. We're joined to take a look at the cash grain market by Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. He's located at the elevator there. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Everybody done planting corn in your area or pretty close?
Pretty well done with corn and pretty far along on the soybeans, actually.
Yeah, I saw a lot of planters, a lot of drills going over the past few days across a good portion of the state of Illinois. What are they saying about the cash grain market after this week?
Well, I think everybody's that Monday market when we dropped, you know, whatever 40 cents in, you know, 20 hours or so there from Sunday night market to Tuesday morning, that really kind of got everybody wanting to walk away from it, I think. I guess if you look for good news from a basis standpoint, I just kind of look back. The last time we were down here at these levels on the future side was, of course, that second day after the report on the planning report. And we're about 10 cents better off or so, 11 cents better off on basis on the corn, and about the same 11 or 12 cents better on basis levels on the beans. Now, that doesn't, of course, make up for the drop that we've seen, but, the cash market is looking fairly strong here.
Your expectations are for it to continue to narrow as we go through the season or not?
Yeah, I think so, and I think as you move towards the, you know, go through the summer here up to a point. Now, I think once you get into, the latter part of the summer, if there's a crop out there and people are hustling to make space, you know, to get corn and soybeans moved, I think you can see some fall off. You know, of course, the soybeans have a lot further to go than the corn does, but the real question in this market right now in my mind is, do we see the users come in here and buy this market? We kind of talked about that after the planning report, and I think it's the case again. Do we see the users come in here and buy this market to get some usage locked in or not?
And if it's a basis play, the elevators would be happy to sell them at this point then?
Oh, I think they'd like to see it continue to come in, but I think that it's at levels that they will continue to move some grain into the system here, too.
All right. Yeah, and your bids for the day?
$3.29 on cash corn, $7 on beans, and $4.36 on wheat.
We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Bill Mares with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the ag weather forecast with Pete Levitt. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Former Chicago Alderman Edward Verdoliak has been indicted on fraud and bribery charges. Federal prosecutors in Chicago say the 69-year-old is accused of scheming with millionaire political contributor Stuart Levine to obtain a kickback for Levine in the sale of a building on Chicago's Near North Side. Levine has pleaded guilty to scheming to pressure financial companies for payoffs in exchange for state business and other charges. He's now cooperating with investigators. Verdoliak was the only defendant named in the four-count indictment returned today by a federal grand jury. Verdoliak was the chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party and leader of Chicago Machine Forces that battled Harold Washington after Washington became the first black mayor of Chicago in 1983. Governor Rob Blagojevich is making a switch and now says lawmakers should vote against his tax proposal. The governor says he still believes in his plan for a $7.6 billion business tax, but he says a no vote today would signal that lawmakers think it's premature to be making any decisions. Urbana's Carl Clinic Association is beginning work on one of two new clinics. Ground was broken this afternoon on the first one in southeast Urbana at Windsor and Myra Ridge. It's expected to house many of the doctors who are now at Carl Clinic's facility on its main campus next to Carl Foundation Hospital when that new building in Urbana is open next year. In 2 weeks, work is expected to begin on a second new clinic in southwest Champaign, Carl spending $40 million on both buildings. The Commission on Presidential Debates is considering two sites in Indiana, among 19 sites across the country, for the 2008 presidential debates. One proposal was submitted by Indiana University and the city of Bloomington, the other by Wayne County to hold a debate in Richmond in the eastern part of the state. The nonprofit, nonpartisan group will pick the four sites for debates between candidates for president and vice president in next year's general election. They should plan to release a list of selected sites in October. And an entomologist says we may not be able to stop the spread of an insect that feeds on ash trees, but we can slow it down. The emerald ash borer is already a problem in at least four states, and insects have already been found in trees in the Chicago area. Phil Nixon of the U of I Extension says tree owners can monitor their trees for the ash borer, and campers are asked not to transport firewood from northern Illinois, Wisconsin, or Michigan. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete. Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest, please.
Well, we have a beautiful warm day today. We're going to keep fair weather right through the weekend, right across most of the Midwest. There's a weak cold front coming through tonight and tomorrow across Iowa and into Illinois, but there's no moisture in front of it. We don't expect anything but maybe a few sprinkles, and mostly in areas west of the Mississippi River as the front comes through. It'll darp the temperatures around, so we won't be back up in the 80s tomorrow, but we will be in the upper 70s, and some onshore breezes along the lakeshore of Michigan will keep Chicago cooled off into probably the upper 60s. Then things start to warm up a little bit as we get past the weekend into Monday. The warm air brings a little bit more moisture with it, and we're going to see some showers developing from west to east Tuesday, mostly Monday night and early Tuesday in Iowa, and then Tuesday during the day and evening across Illinois into Indiana, clearing out on Wednesday, maybe a bit slowly, and then fair and cooler weather the rest of the week. So all in all, a pretty nice week.
How about for the Kansas wheat crop as it starts into maturity?
Well, the Kansas wheat crop, I guess the good news as far as the Kansas wheat crop is concerned is because of the freeze injury that they have had in central Kansas, one thing they don't need is any stress as far as heat is concerned. They've had excessive moisture, and this will be a drier week, but we're not looking for anything hot in Kansas. We're not looking for the temperatures to make it to 90 degrees, and that's good news for that crop. They'll get a few more showers also on Tuesday from a different system farther south. but that will tend to keep the temperatures down. So a moderate temperatures, even though above normal early next week, not hot enough to be damaging to wheat, and then a little cooler weather, that should be good to aid the recovery of the freeze-damaged wheat.
And I'm told next week you won't be available for us to talk to. You'll be off doing some important business in Washington.
Yeah, well, it's a part of a committee. I'm a member of the Board of Atmospheric Sciences and Climate, so we'll be sitting in Washington next week talking about the prospects for where research should be focused on the questions involving both meteorology, that is weather in general, and climate in particular.
And if you could put a good word in for ag meteorology, we'd appreciate it.
Oh, we always do try to sneak that in there, Todd.
Thank you much, Peter.
Okay.
Peter Levitt is an agricultural meteorologist. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon. Don't forget that tomorrow morning, USDA releases its latest world agricultural and supply and demand estimates. We call those the WASDE numbers. At 7:30 a.m. Central Time, we'll post them both to our website at willag.org as quickly as we can. And if you subscribe to our newsletter at that website at willag.org, we'll put them right into your email box tomorrow morning. That's willag.org to get the WASDE numbers. I'm Todd Gleason.